I do have advice for parents of neurodivergent children, for schools and for teachers, and maybe I'll go through the three of them. Mm-hmm. So first of all, I think the most important people in all of this are the children, and we're all just trying to work to support these kids, and we need to work together to do that. Parents, first of all, my, I suppose, three main pieces of advice for you would be to put on your own oxygen mask first. It's so important, and it's always the thing we leave out. But if you are not regulated yourself, and regulation can look different for everybody, then your ability to cope is going to fluctuate. And suddenly you find yourself frazzled at the front door at 9:05 because somebody doesn't have their shoes on. So what I'm talking about there, like for me, regulation is going to the gym. For somebody else, it might be going for a swim, reading a book in the bath, whatever it is. But we tend to do these things as a cure after a day of stress. What I would ask parents to do is do it regularly to prevent the days of stress from appearing. Now, nobody's ever going to get rid of them all. We're not perfect, but it will help. The second thing I would say is speak to your child's school. Ask if you can come in. Tell them what you're seeing at home. Speak openly. Speak honestly. Your school is there to support you and your child. And when we're all working together, we do get better outcomes. And the third thing I would say is try and follow some good advice online. Nearly everybody is online these days. There are so many really good pages out there with great information for parents. Of course, everyone is welcome to follow my page, but there are others as well. Neurodiversity Ireland is a brilliant source of information for everyone. Awesome Training in Cork is another fantastic place with loads of online courses for parents and teachers available as well through them. And it's good as well, not just for information, but to find a community. I think SEN parents can very often feel alone, but you will find a community of people online. And it's great to know that, you know, we're all in this boat together. The second lot of advice I would offer would be for schools, and just for schools to be aware, and I know most of us are aware of this, but 25% of every school population is neurodivergent. And what we mean by neurodivergent is, you know, everything, autism, ADHD, OCD, anxiety disorders, you know, every kind of thing. There are lovely images online people can go on and look at the neurodiversity umbrella and see all the things that fall under that lovely word neurodivergent. And 25% at least of all school populations are neurodivergent. So when you are looking at what you're going to do throughout the school year, bear that in mind. A quarter of the people in your building will need extra supports, and for everything, for every initiative that you're bringing in, let that be part of your consideration from the ground up. The second thing I would say to schools is invite your parents in. The parents of neurodivergent children are often sitting at home very anxious about what their child's school experience looks like, and you can have that conversation with them. You can tell them what you're already doing. It's so important. It will alleviate such anxiety in the home for parents to know that schools are already doing things to support their child. And it'll give parents a chance to tell you as well what they think might help too. And thirdly, for schools, if you're not using the RELATE framework, if your staff hasn't gotten a chance to do the RELATE training yet, I would strongly advise organising that for them, providing opportunity for your staff to download the RELATE document. It's all free. We're all supposed to be using it as the core of our practice now, that regulation first, connection first practice in our classrooms is so important for these children. And then teachers, from Monday morning, say five things that you can do in your classroom from Monday morning that will cost you nothing. Have a visual timetable is the first one. Put it up on your interactive whiteboard. There's loads of them online. Let all the children in your classroom know what it is. Let them all follow it. This is especially beneficial for the children who you'll have sitting in front of you, those little people who are masking, who don't even know or struggling with the day and the routine, who can't predict what's happening. Children in general, they can't hold that kind of information in their heads all the time. So having a visual timetable on the board and ticking it off as you go gives that sense of predictability and routine and safety that children crave. The second thing I would do is I would have dynamic movement breaks as often as possible. for transition times, right before break time, right before lunch time. I would be putting on, you know, your Danny Go videos, get the whole class up on their feet, get them doing the dances, doing the movements. And then when they come back in after break and lunchtime, the third thing I would advise would be deep pressure breaks. So take the shoulders, squeeze down through the shoulders, down through the arms, pull up from the legs of the chairs, press down into your seats, hug your bodies really tightly, and model it yourself. Show how to do it. Talk about why you're doing it, how you're giving your body that real sense of where it is, and how you're putting that lovely, close, deep pressure back in so you feel regulated and calm after a busy break time. The fourth thing I would say is have access to fidgets and ear defenders, wriggle cushions, chair bands, all those kinds of things should be accessible for any child who needs them in your classroom throughout the day, without exception. And if they, especially if you have a child who has a diagnosis or an identification and it does say in their reports that it is recommended they use these things, then they should be allowed to use them at all times. Never work first, regulate after. It's always regulation first. And the fifth thing I would say is where you can, looking at your classroom and how you manage things in your classroom, lower demands as much as possible by doing things like using declarative language. So instead of, you know, you're walking around and someone still hasn't started their work, going into your, you know, teacher kind of rant of, I see you still haven't started that work, you could say something like, I see you might have forgotten what page we're on. And the simple kind of felt safety that a child will get from that kind of approach over time will change things in your classroom. And I think, you know, it, for all of us, it's just really important to remember that these little people, they just want to be loved. They just want to fit in. Nobody wants to stand out and be different or have needs that are, you know, seem to be a burden for other people. So we need to face into all of this support with that unconditional positive regard, that curiosity behind the behaviour, like, what's going on here? How can I help it? How can I make this little person feel better? How can I support them in their environment?
Because I suppose, you know, this will be their first day at school, but for a lot of parents, this will be their first experience of sending their children off to school. And there's a real fear there that, you know, that whatever they're doing at home, that that could be disrupted. So it's important that parents feel that they're getting the support, and that also that their children aren't being thrown into this really scary environment, that they are also being supported in the same way.
Yeah, and I think this is something that people are becoming increasingly concerned about, because we see so much talk about this in the media. And I think, first of all, I'll bring it back to follow the pages online that are going to give you really good and really neuro-affirming advice. If you have a child who you are concerned about, and maybe you're at that point in your journey where you are looking into maybe, do I need support here? Does my child need support here? Then what I would do is I would go into school and I would voice that. Teachers really want to sit down and talk to parents. We schools want that. You know, everything works better when we work together, especially when we're supporting these kids. And I think something we've lost over time is that sort of village, and the even the thought that, you know, am I allowed to do this? You know, we've kind of even got to that point where we're unsure if it's appropriate. And it is appropriate. And for anybody out there who is, you know, listening to this or watching this and wondering, you know, can I do that? You absolutely can, right? Nobody knows your child better than you. No GP, no psychologist, no teacher will ever know your child better than you. The information that you can share with a school or with a clinician is invaluable in how they will approach looking after your child and building pathways for them to better navigate the world and to better interact with their own communities and to have their, you know, their own ability to advocate for what they need themselves. That's all going to come from you advocating for them to begin with, and not being afraid to do so. You will be welcomed. And, you know, if you need support, if you're unsure about how to do that, if you feel like you don't have the language or you don't yet even know what questions you should be asking, you can always reach out for help from someone like me to support you in getting to that point as well. You know, like every case is different and every child is different, and some people will have the capacity to return to school and to walk in through those doors and to move from the sort of safety and connection and regulation of having been at home all summer long, where they could sleep till whatever time they wanted, they could wear their pajamas till 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, there was no pressure, there was no social demand, there was no, you know, and all of a sudden they've transitioned back into the land of rules and, you know, have-tos and time pressure and social pressure and the sensory overwhelm that's in a classroom. And I think, you know, for these children, especially neurodivergent children, autistic children, ADHD, they actually take in 42% more, we believe, in a sensory input into their bodies as well. So you think you're going into an environment that's already incredibly overwhelming and you're taking in up to half as much again for some people. And, you know, the stress and the pressure of that can be so frightening for children and so overwhelming. And it's no wonder that cases become complex and stress accumulates over time as children learn, oh no, I have to go back into all of this. But there are positives about school as well. There are always things that can be done. There is always a way forward. There's always an adaptation that can be made. It's just about figuring out, you know, what is it, getting curious behind it, asking the questions, piecing together everything that you can, and trying, you know, is it this, is it that, can we change this, how do we support you, involving the child. And there is always, there's always something that can be done. And I always feel for parents at this time of year who are, you know, watching things maybe on social media and everybody else has these photos up of their kids in their uniforms and they're so happy going back to school. And not every family has that experience. And it can be a very traumatizing time for parents to know that they're going back into that routine of, you know, maybe tension every morning and never getting out the door on time and that sort of feeling like you're pushing your child to do something that's too difficult for them. And, you know, if you are a parent out there who has that sort of complex case going on, there are things that can be done. There are definitely still routes out there that haven't been explored with you and with your child. So you're not at the end of the road yet, and please don't despair. There will be ways to help and to support. It's just about finding the right ways. So yeah, I feel for the, you know, the fact that there are such different and complex cases out there and people out there with such different needs. So it is a hard topic to kind of generalize about. But I think, you know, if we can use connection, collaboration, curiosity in how we approach everything, and if we can build in sensory support and frequent movement breaks, you know, there's an awful lot just in those things that can really change a school experience for a child.